It's like, good morning, let's begin. So today's daf is Lamed Vav. We're actually starting from Lamed Vav, three lines down from the top, Amar Rava. So remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit in this particular sugya. So remember, we had a very interesting Mishnah that spoke about the idea. First of all, what was important about this Mishnah was also the idea that the Mishnah is giving us certain vital information for Yibum purposes that we have not learned until now. Namely, the ideas that if a woman is pregnant at the time that her husband passes away, her status vis-a-vis Yibum will of course be determined by the viability of the child. Should the woman deliver Chas v'Shalom a stillborn, or should the child die within 30 days, which then indicates that the pregnancy was not the child was not a viable child. Therefore, again, the Maisa, she would still be subject to the laws of Yibum. So you could see that there is a situation in which, where even if a woman goes full-term pregnancy, gives birth to a living child, there could still be a situation in which, again, there would be an obligation of Yibum if the child does not survive for 30 days. So the topic of the Mishnah, of course, was, well, what happens if Yibum or Chalitza is done during that period, during that time when she is pregnant? So essentially, we came out with a fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan said that if chalitza is done while she is pregnant, then the halacha is she does not have to go ahead and do another chalitza. Meaning, let's say it turns out that afterwards, again, lemaisa, the baby does not survive. Because obviously, if the baby does survive, the viable child, there's no din of yibum. Let's say the baby doesn't survive. So again, she need not do another chalitza, because Rabbi Yochanan's position was chalitzas meuberes shma chalitza. That if you do chalitza with a pregnant woman, it is still considered chalitza. However, again, Reish Lakish, and again, the same thing, of course, would be for yibum. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, holds that if the child does not survive, even though they did chalitza originally, another chalitza must be done. Why? Because chalitzas meuberes loshma chalitza. That anything you do with a woman who is pregnant, ultimately, again, is not considered to be halachically valid. Okay, so with that, we pick up on Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph, three lines down. And Yashar Koach to Yecheskel Kain for the beautiful breakfast today. Anything special or just stam?
Next week is a Sam's Club.
In honor of being at Sam's Club. Baruch Hashem. Yes, okay. Well, thank you. Chesel, thank you very much. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Hachi Kamar. So remember, Rava is actually, so just so you know the flow of the Gemara, Rava over here is actually trying to defend the position of Rabbi Yochanan, who would hold that Lamaisa Chalitzas Meuberes is Shema Chalitza. So Amar Rava, Hachi Kamar, this is what it means to say, Hakonis Yevim Dovinim Tzeis Meuberes, if one goes ahead and marries the Yavama, remember the Yavama is his deceased brother's wife, and then it turns out that she's pregnant, Hare Zu Lotinase Tzarasa. Now, I will say what's interesting about this is the following. Remember, the Mishnah was really focusing on the ramifications of all of this vis-a-vis, we'll call her the Yavama, the primary wife, although it's not really a primary and secondary wife, but we'll call it the Yavama. But there's another issue where this comes up, which is, let's say the deceased brother had more than one wife. So therefore, again, Rav explains, this is the halacha. If let's say the surviving brother did Yibum with the sister-in-law, that now turns out that she's pregnant. So what's that law? Hare zolo tinasi tzarasa. If there's another wife, a co-wife, that co-wife may not get married. Because remember what's that law with Yibum? If a man goes ahead and man dies childless, leaves behind multiple wives. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha? All you need to do is Yibum or Chalitza with one of them. By the way, it's not just all. You are only permitted to do Yibum or Chalitza with one of those women. And once Yibum or Chalitza has been done with one of those women, then what's the status of all the other women? They're free. They could go. I mean, obviously, they're widows. But being a widow in halacha does not really restrict you to anyone except Kohen Gadol, right? So again, so okay, so the Shidduch pool is like, you know, one millionth, you know, narrowed. But
they're then erbos to the Yavam?
They're then erbos to them. Correct. Correct. They are correct. Seth is saying good. At the end of the day, they cannot marry their brother-in-law, because remember again, marrying your brother-in-law is one of those arayos that remains true forever. So therefore, again, the ma'isa that the Gemara is saying over here is that, let's say the Yavam did Yibum, and then it turns out that his sister-in-law is pregnant. So now, again, we have an issue. What's the issue? We have to wait until the end of this pregnancy, because one of two things happens. If she delivers a healthy, viable baby, then it turns out that what? There is no Yibum. There is no mitzvah of Yibum. Now, it turns out then that what that first act of relations, that first act of what they thought was Yibum, will turn out to be an accidental act of an illicit relationship, which will warrant a sacrificial atonement, a karban, as you saw in the Mishnah, but there's no din of Yibum. If there's no din of Yibum, then all of the wives are free to marry whoever they want. However, again, if she either miscarries or ultimately delivers a stillborn, or the baby itself is just not viable, dies within 30 days, then there is a mitzvah of Yibum. If there is a mitzvah of Yibum, Yibum/Chalitza, then again, then the shaila is that going to have to be done again? So remember, so Rav is saying over here that during the course of these events, the co-wife, the other wife who was married to the deceased brother, cannot do anything either because she has to wait to see how this pregnancy plays out. Shema Yehe Vlad Ben Kayama, because maybe again, the wife who was taken in Yibum, her baby will be a viable baby. Ubias Mu'uberes Lo Shma Bia, and therefore again, the Yibum that was done was not a valid Yibum. The Chalitzas Mu'uberes Lo Shma Chalitza, and chalitza you do with a pregnant woman is not a valid chalitza, and therefore again, v'havlad eino poter ad sheyetzi la'avir ha'olam. And at the end of the day, I will say, the reason why everything goes into a holding pattern is why? Because we have to wait until that child is born. We don't know what the status of anyone is going to be until ultimately that child is born. And by the way, it's not just born, but really what? 30 days. You really need to wait. So it's whatever remainder of the pregnancy there is, plus 30 days after the birth of the child. And until that time, pretty much everyone is in a marital holding pattern. No one could do anything. So the Gemara says, Tanya Kavase, the Rava. So it's a brice that supports Rava. Hakonis Yevim Tovin in Seis Me'uberes. If one goes ahead and does Yibum, and surprise, he finds out that the Yevama is pregnant, Hare zo lo tinase tzarasa. The co-wife cannot go ahead and marry anyone else. Shema yehe Vlad ben Kayama, because perhaps again the child will be a viable child. Vein bia v'chalitza poteres ela vlad poter. And it's not the bia, the yibum, or the chalitza that will exempt, but rather again it's the child. V'havlan id potra ad sheyetzi la'avir ha'olam. And ultimately again the child, we don't know if the child's going to exempt everyone from yibum or not until the child is born. Plus, again, 30 days of viability. Well, so you should just know that 30-day window of viability is important for areas other than just Yibum. It's very important in terms of the laws of Avelos as well. That Chas Shalom, again, if a couple has a child and the child does not survive for 30 days, there is no din of Shiva or no din of Avelos for that child. For that child. So the Gemara says again, Taima de Shema Yehe Vlad Ben Kayama. Now the reason we have to wait to do anything is why? Because there's a possibility that the child ultimately again will be what? Will be a viable child. Ha lo havi Vlad Ben Kayama. But if the child was not a viable child, then what? Miftar Tsarasa. Then see Rabbi say, what's interesting about Rava's whole chap was like this. Rava says essentially, right? Remember the case over here. The Yavam already did Yibum with one of his sisters-in-law, right? With one of the widows of the deceased brother. That already happened. Now it turns out she's pregnant, and it's clear, by the way, that she's pregnant from her deceased husband, not from her new husband. So what's the issue? Rava essentially says, listen, no one do anything. And we'll see, by the way, we separate the Yavam and the Yavama. We obviously don't allow them to continue to live together, because if it turns out that the child is viable, then Lamai says no din of Yibam, in which case, again, this is an illicit relationship. So we separate everyone. We tell the co-wife, I'm sorry, you can't get remarried to anyone. You have to wait. Now, what's interesting, according to Rava, is what? Is that Lamaisa, Rava puts everything dependent on the child. So Rava says one of two things happens. If the child is a viable child, then what? Then Lamaisa, again, what happens to the co-wife? The child's a viable child. She could go ahead and she could do anything she wants. Remember, if there's a viable child, then it turns out retroactively there was no obligation of Yibum. If there's no obligation of Yibum, she's just like any other widow. She can marry whoever she wants.
There's no obligation of Yibum on any of the
ones. Correct, correct. No obligation of Yibum, period.
Correct.
No obligation of Yibum, period. However, again, if there is no child, when I say is no child, the child nebuch, she miscarries, child dies at birth, stillborn, or dies within 30 days. So what does Rava say? In that case, what? Rava makes it sound like Lemaisa, what the Yavam did retroactively works. Meaning, the fact that the Yavam did Yibum, that works. And therefore, what happens to the co-wife? She's free to marry whoever she wants, because now again Yibum has been done. So mostly the point the Gemara is making over here, ha lo havi Vlad ben Kayama miftar tsarasa. What's clear from Rava is that Rava says everything is dependent on the status of the child, and if the child turned out, let's say the child died at birth. Therefore, retroactively, it turns out that, not retroactively, it turns out now that the deceased brother really did die without children, in which case there's a mitzvah of Yibum. And what Rava makes it sound like is what? That the act of Yibum that was done already, you know, 6 months ago with his living brother and the sister-in-law and the widow was an effective act of Yibum. What do you see from there? Lema tehevi tiyuf to derish lakish. I'm sorry?
Why does the Kohen have to wait?
Because you have to wait to see what happens until with the baby.
Sure.
The co-wife is in the same boat as the regular wife. All wives are in the same boat. But you don't know that until the child lives or dies.
She skates anyway.
No, she doesn't. There's a difference between being a chalutza and being ultimately, again, if she's a chalutza, that's one status. If she's a grusha, if she's an amana, that's another status. The point is, you don't know what's going to happen until the mice of the child. Now, what you're saying is, but she's going to go be able to marry someone else regardless, but that someone else depends. If she's a chalutza, she can't marry a kohen. If she's an amana, she can't marry a kohen. So you'll say, let her marry non-kohanim. So we'll see. What the Gemara is good, we're going to see that. So the Gemara says the following. We're both saying, now remember, the whole reason we're bringing this up now is because this would appear to be lemet to have it to Reish Lakish. This would appear to refute Reish Lakish and bolster Rabbi Yochanan. Because remember, what does Reish Lakish say? Reish Lakish says that chalitza or yibum mu'ubaras is what? Loshma chalitza. It's meaningless. From here, it's clear that all Rava's telling you is we just need to look at what happens with the baby. If the baby doesn't survive, chas v'shalom, then what? Then Lamai said the yibum that was done was totally fine. Even though the widow was pregnant at the time of the yibum. So that goes ahead and refutes the position of Reish Lakish and supports Rabbi Yochanan. Amlecha Reish Lakish. So remember, again, without making this very confusing, although I know that's difficult, right? We're really focused on a very simple machlokes. We're focused on a very simple machlokes that if you do yibum or chalitza with a woman who's pregnant, is that a valid yibum or chalitza or not? Reish Lakish says it's not. Rabbi Yochanan says it is. From Rava's statement, it sounds like we're supporting the position of Rabbi Yochanan. To which the words, Reish Lakish could say to you, Hachi katoni. Here's how you have to read it. If someone does yibum with his deceased brother's wife, his sister-in-law, and it turns out that she's pregnant, the co-wife should not get remarried yet. Why? Now, we'll say this reading actually makes a little bit more sense, and Howard, this addresses your question. Why should she not go ahead and get remarried? Maybe the child won't survive. Rava will say no, because Rabbi Yochanan, according to your logic, the co-wife should be able to get remarried. Let her get remarried. So, right, maybe the only covenant, the restriction we'll place on her is he can't marry a kohen. Okay, so that'll cover your bases. But Rava says, the way I think you have to read this is actually very differently. I think we don't let the co-wife get remarried. You know why? Because Lamaisa, if it turns out that the baby doesn't survive, the yibum that was done was not an effective yibum, and therefore all the wives are still bound ultimately to the yavam. V'im tomar, halach acha rov nashim, v'rov anashim, v'lad ma'al yoyaldan. But maybe you'll say, go after the majority of women, and what majority of women deliver healthy children, which I will say is actually very interesting, considering, again, we know historically infant mortality rates, right? But yet the Gemara says, even despite high infant mortality rates, still the majority of women go ahead and give birth to living children, to which the Gemara says, so I'd say, maybe I'd say like this, let's assume that when the woman's pregnant, that's what? That let's go after Rove. We use the laws of majorities for many areas in Halacha. Let's assume she's going to deliver a healthy baby and act accordingly. To which the Gemara says no, because there's another Halacha about Evlad Ein Polter Achetzi La'avra Olam. Because at the end of the day, we can't go Basa Rove, because it will say, here's another interesting piece with Rove. You see, Rove works. Like, let's say again, when does Rove work? Rove, laws of majority, works when there is no other way to be mevarer, when there is no other way to go ahead and try to work out the circumstances. But if you can figure out what the reality is without relying on the laws of majority, that's much better. So what the Gemara is essentially saying over here is, why would we use Rove? We're going to wait a couple of months, and we're going to see what actually unfolds over here. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Efshar Isa L'Hadir Reish Lakish. V'lo tinan lo b'mas nisan. So Rabbi Loza says, is it possible that the halacha follows Reish Lakish, and yet again we don't have a Mishnah that supports that? Nafak dak v'ashkach. So he went out and he found the Mishnah that seems to support Reish Lakish. Disnan ha'isha. Also another interesting case. Ha'isha shehalach b'ayla v'tzeras l'medina sayam. If a woman, so let's say Reuven's married to two women, Rachel and Leah. So what happens? He goes with Rachel overseas. He takes Rachel on a vacation. Leah's at home. And what happens? Uba'u va'amrula meis ba'aleich. And what happens? Word gets back to Leah, who's back home, to say that what? Reuven died on the trip. Okay. So now the assumption over here is neither Rachel nor Leah have children. So the shayla is yibum. So what's the halacha? Harei zolo tinase v'lo tisyabim ad sheteida shema mu'uberes hitzarasa. So the Gemara says, Leah, remember who's back at home. Leah was not taken on vacation. Right? So she's back at home. She has to wait. I like to infuse a little drama in these cases, right? So Leah has to wait to do anything, meaning she has to wait to do Yibum, or for that matter, marry someone else until when? Until she finds out if her co-wife, who was away with her husband, is pregnant or not. So the Gemara said, let's analyze this. Bishlama yavume lo shema yehe vlad ben kayama v'yifka be'isir eishes ach de'oraisa. So I understand why Leah can't do Yibum. Why can't Leah do Yibum, Rabbosai? Because remember, you're not allowed to marry your brother-in-law even after your husband dies. Right? Even after a husband dies, a widow is still not permitted to marry her husband's brother. The only dispensation for that situation is when? Is Yibum. So I understand why she can't do Yibum, because if it turns out that what? That then Rachel is pregnant and has a child, it turns out that then she has committed an act of biblical immorality. Ella, lo sachlots, amai. But why can't she go ahead and do chalitza? Meaning, what's the harm in chalitza? Bishlama tachlots, bisoch tes, vitinase, bisoch tes, lo, hainu safek. So I understand if we don't want her to do chalitza and then marry someone else in the midst of the 9 months, because then we're still in the case of savik, what's going to be with the child. However, ela tachlos besoch tisha, v'tinase la'achar tisha. But I have a great idea. Let her do chalitza now. Let her do chalitza now. And that way what? After 9 months, she's ready to go either way. When I say ready to go, meaning she's ready to get married either way. Because one of two things happens, right? If the baby is a viable baby, then what? She didn't need the chalitza anyway, right? It didn't really make a difference. And if the baby is not a viable baby, then what? Then what? She's already done chalitza. So let her do the chalitza during the 9 months and let her go in there for again. Bosa, it's just what we're just trying to do over here is just trying to see how we could kind of like fast track the process a little bit. So at the end of the waiting period, she's able to go in and get remarried. Ella, so the Gemara says, Ella, I'm sorry, Utam, Ella tachlos v'soch tisha v'tina se la'achar tisha. Ulatamek says the Gemara, using that logic, tachlots vitinase la'achar tes. Why don't you just go ahead and have her go ahead and do chalitza and get married after 9 months? Ela bar minei dahi, da abayi bar rava, v'rav chinina bar abayi, da amri tarvayhu, shema, so what's the problem over here? Shema yehe vlad ben kayama, v'nimtsa ata matzricha kruz l'kuhuna. So we'll say, here's the problem. As good of a suggestion as this sounds, there's a downside to it, which is what? And we'll say, if she does chalitza, then what's going to happen? People are going to assume that she has a status of a chalitza. She has a status of a chalitza, as we said before. She may not marry kohanim. Now let's say it turns out that what? That lamaisa, the baby died. Or for that matter, yeah, let's go, the baby died. So what happens? Then what happened? I'm sorry. No, excuse me. Let's say the baby survived. Let's say, again, her co-wife had a viable pregnancy. Therefore, it turns out, what? She didn't need chalitza. In which case, what are we going to have to do? We're now going to have to make an announcement. Cruz Laguna means we're going to have to make an announcement that Leah is what? Leah is not a chalitza, and she is permitted to go to marry a kohen. So the Gemara says, okay, felitzricha. Meaning, what the Gemara is making sound like is, no, we don't want her to do chalitza during the 9 months. Why? Because if she does chalitza during the nine months, people are going to think she's a chalitza. And then if it turns out that Rachel had a baby and the baby survived, and therefore she never needed chalitza, you're going to have to now make an announcement to say that she's not really a chalitza, she can marry a kohen. So Gemara says, okay, so what? So make the announcement. Meaning, what is the big deal? Dilma ika inish dahavi bechalitza velo havi behachraza. Because here's the concern of both sides. You see, remember, again, getting out a message today is very different than in Talmudic times, that there was a concern that what? That there was a concern that there may be people who will hear about the fact that she was a chalutza, but will what? Will not hear about the fact that, lemaisa, She's not really a chalutza. She's really just a widow. And what's going to happen? If she subsequently does marry a kohen, what are people going to think? And people are going to think, oh, you see a chalutza can marry a kohen. I will say, understand that the chazal have to be concerned with not just the way things are, but the way things look. They have to be concerned with that reality. So if we let her do chalitza now during the 9 months, you're right. Technically speaking, we could just make another announcement saying she's not a chalutza, she's just an almana. But the concern is, who's to say everybody's going to hear that secondary piece of information? And then when she does marry a kohen, which she is absolutely permitted to do, what erroneous conclusion are people going to go ahead and draw that a chalutza can marry a kohen? Therefore, in order to avoid this potential ambiguity, and it's not just ambiguity, a potential real mistake that could come from this, although it's a rabbinic mistake, but a mistake nevertheless. Therefore, again, we say wait to do chalit until after the 9 months. Amli Abaye, midi lo sachlos velo tesyabim katani. Does the Braisa say that she shouldn't do chalit, she shouldn't do yibum? Lo tinase velo tesyabim katani. To which the Gemara says, "Below chalitza," it means ultimately again that she should not do anything without chalitza. Aval ichalitzla hachanami desharia. But should she ultimately again go ahead and do chalitza, it would in fact work. Another reading of that brayz. Atanya kavasi deresh lakish. We have another brayz that supports resh lakish. Hacholitzla meubares vehipila. If a man did chalitza with the widow, with his sister-in-law, and she was pregnant, and then she miscarried, tzricha chalitza min ha'achin. She ultimately, again, requires chalitza from the brothers. Which Shabbos say, what tells you what? Tells you what? That chalitza with a pregnant widow is not a valid chalitza. Amar Rava, Rava said, Hilchasa kavase di Reish Lakish bahani tlas. Rava says, therefore, the halacha follows Reish Lakish in these three cases. Then I will say, one case is chada hada amron. One case is what we just said, namely, that chalitza with a pregnant woman or yibum with a pregnant woman is not effective. We will say, at the end of the shir, when I have a little bit, I'm going to say a few minutes, you each should have a page of Rambam. So we're going to do that Rambam inside where we see how the Rambam paskins. In fact, we'll get to it. So there, the Gemara is therefore saying there are three cases in which we paskin. Like Reish Lakish. Number one is the case we just saw, that in the Machlokis, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, if you do Chalitz or Yibum with the pregnant widow, Rabbi Yochanan said it's valid, Reish Lakish said it's not valid. The Gemara Rav is saying the halacha follows Reish Lakish, that such a chalitza is not valid. So we'll say again, so how does that play out? So that means Lemaisa, again, if the surviving brother did chalitza, let's say, with, or it doesn't matter, yibum or chalitza, with his sister-in-law while she's pregnant, and then what happens? Then she miscarries, or she delivers a stillborn, or the baby dies within 30 days, in which case, again, she really is subject to yibum or chalitza. He has to what? He has to do it again. He has to do another act of yibum or chalitza. So that's number one. Next, Idach, what's the next case we pass like Reish Lakish? We'll say it's interesting cases. Hamer Chalik Nechasav Apiv. So we'll say it's an interesting case. This is a case of a Shechiv Meira. So a Shechiv Meira is someone who is terminally ill. But not just terminally ill, deathbed ill. They're on their deathbed. So the halacha is normally, if you want to go ahead and convey property as a gift, you can't just make a verbal declaration. You have to employ certain kinyanim, certain acts of acquisition in order to affect a property transfer. The rabbis relaxed these laws when someone is on their deathbed. Because when someone is on their deathbed, one of the things that gives them a certain amount of solace and inner quietude is what? Is only that they have the ability to dispose of their estate as they see fit. And therefore, again, there's a principle that says, Divrei Shechiv Meira, the words of a Shechiv Meira, are kechsuvin uchim surin damu. It's as if they're written and given over. An incredible power of a... Isn't there a legal term for like a deathbed conveyance?
Yes, but I don't know what that term is.
Okay, good. But it exists. Right? That was a very lawyerly answer, by the way. Right? Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Right? Okay, so in halacha, there's this concept of a deathbed conveyance. This idea that you give it over on your deathbed, and it's as if, again, Seth is a real estate attorney, right? That's like, it's not, I looked up, but see on those...
I do employment law.
Employment law. Yehuda?
No.
Right. Okay, fine. So pretty much I'm as qualified as you guys to answer this question. All right, excellent. Good. So listen to this case. So someone is dividing up his property. So again, the father is on his deathbed and he divides up his property. And what does he do? He says, Riba la echad umiyat la echad vihishva la hemes habachar. So we'll say, remember again, so what does the father do? The father decides, let's say he has three sons. Reuven is his bechor. He doesn't want, remember, biblically, a bechor gets a double portion. He doesn't want to give Reuven a double portion. Instead, what he wants to do is he wants to give Reuven, Shimon, and Levi equal portions of his estate. He wants. So what's the halacha? Dvar of Kayamin. He could do that. Now I was like, why could he do that? Because remember, what is he effectively doing? He's giving away his property as a gift. You can gift away your property to your children in any way you see fit. That's not inheritance. Inheritance is how your property is divided after you die. That is legislated by certain biblical laws. A bechor, a firstborn, gets a double portion, and that you can't change that. But if I convey my property while I'm alive, even on my deathbed, I give it to my children, I can give that however I want. Vim amar mishum yerusha, but of course this only works if what? This only works if you're conveying it as a gift. If you say that I'm giving this over to you as your inheritance, then what? Then lo amar klum. Then at the end of the day, that is not effective. We'll say, why is it not effective? There's a concept of masna mashakasu batorah. Masna mashakasu batorah means you cannot legislate something that is counter to biblical law. So for example, if in your will you say that I want all three of my sons to inherit equally, halachically, that is invalid because you are going against biblical law. So if he says it's a gift, that's fine. If he says it's a Yerusha, it's not fine. However, again, if he literally wrote something down, and as long as somewhere within the conveyance it was indicated that it's being given as a gift, then again his words are upheld. Amud Beis. Vam Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Li'olam lo kana at shiyom raploni uploni yershu sada plonis uplonis shenisatim lohem b'matana v'yershum. So Reish Lakish says, interestingly enough, you could use a lashon of Yerusha, of inheritance, as you want, as long as, well, as long as what? As long as by each conveyance, you use a lashon of matana. You use a lashon of a gift. So as long as gift is mentioned somewhere, even if you use the wording, ultimately, again, of inheritance, sahalach l'maisa, that's okay. I will say, this is actually very important, because it's very important to have a will. Very important to have a will, not just like a advanced directive in terms of what you want to do, but it's very important to have to do estate planning and to have a will, and it's very important to have a halachic will. Because if you don't have a halachic will, you really could run. The last thing you want is after 120, when you are in Shamayim, and you know they're deciding what to do with you, and Kadosh Baruch Hu looks down and sees your children dividing up your estate, not a pi halacha. It's not going to work well. So there are many, many easy ways to go up, because many people do not want to give one child a double portion. They want to divide their estate equally among all of their children, and there are multiple halachic mechanisms that one could employ to be able to do that. Actually, what we just learned is one of them, that there are different formulations of halachic wills. One of them is that essentially what you do is you convey your estate to your children as a gift according to the established portions you have, and you're able to create what's called a retroactive gift, that you have a gift that essentially takes effect one moment before you die. So obviously that clause is only triggered when a person dies, but retroactively it's able to formulate the entire estate disbursement as a gift, and that gives you absolute flexibility to divide it up among sons, daughters, firstborns, younger ones, however you want. Again, different shear, not for now, but again, I'm just pointing out that this does have a lemaisa kabbonis. I'm sorry? Well, you could, again, if you use that mechanism, you could divide it up however you want. You could gift to whoever you want. It doesn't have to be just children. A person wants to convey something to grandchildren, to whoever else. Here's the klal. If you are dispersing your estate via a gift being made during lifetime, you have the right to give away your property however you want. The only time that Torah legislates how your estate is dispersed is if when you die, the Torah says, here is how disbursement of estate works. But during your lifetime, you have the ability to do whatever you want. Because you're not Masna Mashakasu Batorah. I'm making a lifetime gift.
I mean, but that was the argument they said before. If you say the word Yerusha, then you're going directly against.
Correct, but as long as I have Matana there, it's okay.
Rish Lakish says, even though you're saying.
Correct. Rish Lakish says, even when I'm worried about the word Yerusha, as long as you have Matana stated by each gift, it's absolutely okay. Ta'idach, we'll say, obviously, these cases are a lot more complex than what we're making of it now, but I'm just trying to isolate the principles for you. Vi'idach, what's the third? So we'll say, case in one way, passing Rish Lakish, is again our Mishnah that Chalitza or Yibum Mulberes does not work. Case number two is you could even state the word Yerusha as long as you also state the word Matana, right? Gift by each and every conveyance. Case number three, V'idach Tisnan, Hakosev Kon, also another very interesting case. Hakosev Kon Chasa Libno La'achra Mosa. Also, listen to this case. So I go ahead and I write the Nishtar. I write in a document that I'm giving all of my property to my son after I die. All of it goes to my son after I die. Okay, so what's the halacha? So we'll say, interestingly enough, if you look at Rashi, la'achar moso, shekasav mehayom ula'achar miso, ve'in la'abahem ela'achilas peros b'chayv. Now we'll say, again, without getting into all the intricacies of this, which means when we get to Baba Kama, we'll see this. If I make that statement that I'm giving my property to my son after I die, then essentially my son, from a halachic perspective, already has a certain degree of title to that property. What I retain the rights to essentially is what? Is what we call peros. So we call peros. Peros means many different things. Peros could literally mean produce, but peros also means what? Usage. Usage, profit, actual produce, usage, that is all mine. When I say mine, the father. So the son has technical title to it, technical title, but the father ultimately retains all usage, benefit, produce, and profit. So he goes on. So what's the halacha? Ha'av, you know, yachalim, carbonation, asalim. No. So we'll say, so now what's the ramification of giving my son title? Means I can't really sell the property. I can't sell the property. Now we'll say, what I can sell is what? I can sell the peros. So let's say I gave him an apple orchard. I could actually sell the apples. What I can't sell is the actual orchard itself. V'habein eni yochel limkar mnei sheim b'shus av. And my son, also can't sell it. Well, first of all, he can't sell it because I'm going to kick him out of the house, right? But he also can't sell it. Why? He also can't sell it.
The ultimate Trump.
Correct. He also can't sell it. Lemaise again, because remember, I still have the peros. So I, the father, have the peros. The son has the title. So it's a little bit of a joint ownership over here. So neither of us really has the ability to sell it. I'm sorry? That's fine. Anytime you agree, you can do anything you want. Absolutely. If they agree, not a problem. Machara Av, however, again, so we'll say, let's say now they went. Machara Av, let's say the father went ahead and sold it. Let's say the father did sell it. So the Gemara says, Mechurin Achiyamos. Achiyamosu. So again, technically speaking, it's sold. And I will say, remember, because what did the father effectively sell? The father sold his rights. He sold his rights to Peros. So that sale is fine, but that sale has a duration. It's cut off when? Because the father only has the ability to sell the peros as long as he owns them, which is only until he's alive. But the moment he dies, again, that sale essentially comes to an end. Comes to an end. Machar haben. Plus, it's actually interesting because you also see, you know, title searches are not like a new concept. The Gemara already talks about title searches because you had often had cases like this where you had one person who had usage from the land, but someone else owned the title. Obviously, again, it's not so. I might still buy the peros from the father, but I'm going to buy it at what? I'm going to buy it at a discount because for all I know, he could die tomorrow. I have no idea what's going to happen to him. Okay, so if the father sells it, the sale works, but only until the father dies. Machar haben, what happens if the son sells it? Ein lelokeach klum ad sheyamos ha'av. So we'll say, obviously, in that case, what? So obviously, in that case, the purchaser has no rights in it until the father dies. Because the son, as much as the son has a quasi-title to it, he can't exercise that title until the father's dead. V'itmar, and it was said, machar haben b'chaye ha'av. What happens? It's an interesting case. Let's say the son went ahead and sold the property while the father was still alive. Umeis haben b'chaye ha'av. And then the son predeceased the father. So what is the status of the sale? Rabbi Yochanan amar lo kana lokech. Rabbi Yochanan said, the purchaser has not acquired anything. Reish Lakish amar kana lokech. Reish Lakish said, the purchaser did acquire something. Why? So what's the logic behind each of these positions? Rabbi Yochanan amar lo kana lokech. Rabbi Yochanan says that the purchaser didn't purchase anything. Why? Kinyan peros ke kinyan aguf dami. Because ultimately, Rabbi Yochanan will say that he who owns the peros, he who owns the produce, profit, usage, he is the true owner of the property. And even though the son has a quasi-title, at the end of the day, that's halachic, not halachically meaningless, but it doesn't make him the primary owner, especially now since he's dead. Reish Lakish Amar, Karna Lokeach, Reish Lakish says, no, the purchaser did go ahead and actually acquire something. Kinyan Peros, Laf Kinyan Aguftami. Because ultimately, again, owning the Peros is not considered like owning the property. Now, both say, what they're arguing about is the following. Remember, this case over here is the son sold it. Now, obviously, everyone's going to agree that's what? While the father is alive, the purchaser can't get anything. The Shai is when the father dies, does the purchaser then acquire the rights? So apparently Rabbi Yochanan says no, because Rabbi Yochanan will say that the father is still considered to be the owner of the property, because peros, having peros is like ownership of the property. Reish Lakish is the one who says no, the purchaser did acquire. Now, of course, when does he acquire? only after the father dies. Why? Because Reish Lakish says the son was the real owner of the property because he had title. The fact that the father had peros is not, does not make him the primary owner. Therefore, the sale is effective, and of course, only effective after the father himself dies. So that's the third case in which he passed like Reish Lakish. Ein avad shel kayamam. So I'll say again, the good news is we'll get to all of these cases. You know, I know it feels a little unfortunate that we can't focus on that, but we will, Amir Hashem, we have still a long road ahead of us. We'll see all of them. So, next part of the Mishnah, Ein avad shel kayamam. So also remember, the Mishnah said the following case. Hakonis es yivimto v'nimtes muberes. So back to the case of the Mishnah. A man marries his sister-in-law, the widow, and it turns out that she is pregnant. V'yolda, and she gives birth. Bizman shavlat shachem yotzi v'chavon akarben v'imlarav shachem. So if the child does not survive, yekayim, he is permitted to remain married to her, right? Because again, essentially, what does it mean? He's permitted to remain married to her. It's yibum. The child doesn't survive. It's yibum. Says the Gemara. Tanamishum Rabbi Eliezer Amru Yotzi Beget. That's actually very interesting. They said the name of Rabbi Eliezer that he should divorce her with a get. And I both say, take a look at Rashi. So Rashi is over here. Tanamishum Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Polika Sefer Demasnis. And Rabbi Eliezer is arguing a last case of the Mishnah. The Koi Aina Vlad Shakayama. And Rabbi Eliezer is also commenting on the case where the baby does not survive. See, he says, Vika Amarihu. So we'll say, interestingly enough, Rabbi Eliezer says something very interesting. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the Mishnah. See, the Mishnah paskins that, again, let's say, remember, Reuven dies, leaves behind the widow, Leah, so Shimon does Yibum with Leah, then it turns out Leah's pregnant from Reuven. So what does the Mishnah say? We have to wait to see what's going to happen. Let's say, again, Nebuch, the baby dies in childbirth. So what's the halacha? Now it turns out that Leah is subject to Yibum because now it turns out Reuven really did die childless. So the Mishnah said, so now remember, Shimon already did Yibum. So therefore the Mishnah says Yikayim, which sounds like, again, the marriage is able to endure. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, we do not allow such a marriage to endure, but rather, again, we make Shimon give Leah a get. We make them get divorced. Why? Rashi explains, it's a knas, it's a penalty. Because since you entered into a relationship that was a suffek iser, we are not going to allow such a relationship to endure, even though technically speaking it could endure, but this is a penalty for putting yourself in a questionable situation. Therefore, again, he gives her a get. Now remember, no chalitza. Why no chalitza? Because technically the yibum was good, so therefore they're technically a married couple, but Rabbi Eliezer mandates a get. I'm sorry? What's a Doraisa?
The
so now they're married. They did Yibum. No, they did Yibum. They did Yibum. Now divorce her. They're married. So now divorce her. The Knas is they have to dissolve the marriage. It was a valid Yibum. Now it turns out, Rabbi Lez's whole point is, okay, Shkoyach, retroactively you're a tzaddik. But you know what? But Bishas Maisa, you ran the risk of Mamish being a manuvel, right? Of doing something that was literally arayos. So because of that, again, Rabbi Lez is essentially creating like a public policy standard. How do you get people to avoid questionable situations? By creating a harsh penalty on the back end of it. So the harsh penalty over here is we make them get divorced. So he says over here, Amar Rava, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Lezer, Amru Davar Echad. So listen to this. Rava said, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer both said one thing. They're both saying, now, what does that mean? Rabbi Eliezer had Now remember, Rabbi Eliezer, we just said, Rabbi Eliezer is of the position that Lamaisa, even though retroactively now it turned out that your Yibum was a good Yibum, we're not going to allow this marriage to endure, and therefore you have to divorce her. So Rava suggested Rabbi Meir says the same thing. What does Rabbi Meir say? Disanya, lo yisa adam uberes chavero menekes chavero. Rava says, interesting halacha, we're going to see this actually later on. You'll see the Mesoras Shas quotes this, actually in Membeis, in just a week from now. So a man is not permitted to marry his friend's widow who is either pregnant or nursing. You're not supposed to marry a woman who is pregnant or nursing. We'll say, now we'll see. We actually touched on this a little bit earlier. The reason for that is the concern that, again, it may adversely impact her current pregnancy, or she may become pregnant while she's nursing, diminish her milk supply, and ultimately put her young child at risk. Therefore, the halacha is you cannot go ahead and marry a woman who is pregnant and nursing. V'imnasa, obviously we'll define the scope of that more when we get to the sugya. V'imnasa, yotzi v'lo yachzir olam tziv Rebbe Meir. And Rebbe Meir says, and if you married her, you have to divorce her, and you may never remarry her. Meaning that, let's say again, even after she weans her child, or even after she gives birth and then weans her child, you still can never remarry her. Now, both say, it sounds like, why is Rebbe Meir saying that? B'pashut, the reason Rebbe Meir is saying that is it's a knas. Same idea. Don't marry this woman. And again, when we say don't marry this woman, this is for the benefit of the woman, for the benefit of her pregnancy, and for the benefit of her. We're safeguarding the interests of the child in utero and the child who's being nursed. Therefore, if you violated this and you did this, Rabbi Meir says, you have to divorce her and you may not remarry her ever again. The chum say, no. Yotzi. Uchalishiagiyaz manolichnos yichnos. You don't have to divorce her forever. Yotzi, we'll see what the word yotzi means. But yotzi sounds like, all right, don't continue any kind of conjugal relationship now. But after the waiting period, after she weans the child, or after she gives birth, and then weans the child, then you could continue this marriage. So the Gemara says, Amalei Abayi. So we'll say, so therefore, Rava is suggesting that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer are kind of on the same page. Because Rabbi Eliezer said what? That if you entered into this questionable Yibum situation, granted it worked out for your benefit, she really is subject to Yibum, you have to divorce her, and that's it, you're done. And Rabbi Meir says, you're not supposed to marry this woman who's pregnant or nursing, and if you married her, then what? You have to divorce her and never remarry her again. So, I don't know how far we would actually take that. I don't know. So we'll say, see the Gemara. So Rav is suggesting that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Meir are of like mind. I'm really Abaye. Mimai, not necessarily. Dilmalohi. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer takes such a strong stance by the Yibam case, why Rabbi Osai? Because that was a real roll of the dice. Because when you married the widow, you took a risk of what? That she was going to have a perfectly healthy baby, in which case what? She's really your brother's wife, which is a biblical prohibition punishable by death if you go ahead and you marry such a woman like that. And that's why, again, Rabbi Eliezer is going to take a much harder stance on creating a class or creating a rabbinic penalty to dissuade people from doing this. Right? But again, you know, at the end of the day, yes, you're not supposed to marry a woman who's pregnant or marry a woman who's nursing, but you know what, if you did, that's not biblical. That's a rabbinic prohibition. I would say maybe even Rabbi Eliezer would agree with the Rabbanan. Rabbanan, severely, who says that Rabbi Eliezer would take such a strong stance over there? Maybe he'll like the Rabbanan. Inami, furthermore, Ad kamo kam Rabbi Meir Hasam el mishum de Rabbanan v'asu chachamim chizuk l'divrei miyosem mishal Torah. Or perhaps again, why is Rabbi Eliezer so strict in the case of the pregnant or nursing woman? Because they both say sometimes you see this, that you actually have to be stricter with rabbinic law than with biblical law. Why? Because people have a natural inherent reverence towards biblical law. You don't have to necessarily bolster biblical law to get people to observe it, because it's biblical law. Rabbinic law, people take many more liberties with it, and therefore perhaps only in the case of the rabbinic law, the nursing and the pregnant woman, where we take such a strong stance that if you married her, you might have to divorce her. Aval hocha midoraisa mifresh parashimine. But over here, in the case of the Yibam case, people will be naturally hesitant to do anything that's potentially wrong because they know they're dealing with a biblical prohibition. So therefore, I will say ultimately again, lemaisa, the Gemara is just suggesting that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer do not necessarily align one with the other. Amar Rava ul divrei chachamim yotzia beget. So I'll say, interesting, Rava says, one second. Now the Rabbanam, the Chachamim, disagree with Rabbi Meir. And whereas Rabbi Meir says, if you marry a woman who's nursing or a woman who's pregnant, you have to mamish divorce her with a get, and that's it. The Chachamim just said, yotzi, you have to literally remove her, and therefore, when the time comes, meaning when the prohibited period ends, you could remarry her. So Rava just suggests that Chachamim should really require to give a get. Not just separate, but mamish to terminate the marriage now, and then what? When she becomes permitted to you, then you could remarry her. Amar Marzuch says, you're right, that's what the Chachamim are saying, diktani nami, diktani yotzi velo katani yafrish. If you look at the word in the Chachamim say that what? You should remove her, as opposed to what? Yafish, separate. So you're supposed to separate would sound like what? Sounds like what? They're still married, but literally, we use this literally, they're separated. But the Chum don't use that lashon. One of the Chum say, yotzi. Yotzi means dissolution of the marriage. So the mice of the Chum are, here's the difference between the Chum and Rabbi Meir. Everyone agrees that what? That if you marry this woman while she is nursing or pregnant, that what? Everyone agrees that what? You have to terminate the marriage. So what's the machlokis? According to Rabbi Meir, you may never remarry her again. That's the penalty. You did something, you may never remarry her again. According to Chum, you could remarry her as soon as Lemaisa she becomes permitted. All right, boss, we're going to stop over here. Now, let me just show you quickly the Rambam. So just take out that sheet for just one moment, because I want to bring you closure on the Reish Lakish Sugya. I want you to be able to sleep tonight.
Rabbi, why didn't they just put
Oh, so they did that. They did that. Oh, that's correct. No, no, you didn't miss that part. You missed that part. Right? So they did that. Except all these cases come up. What if you did it? What if you did it? Remember, there is a standard halacha that says you may not marry. Again, there's different standards. A man dies, you're not supposed to marry a woman for 90 days. A woman should not get remarried after 90 days, after death or divorce, to make sure she's not pregnant from her previous marriage. Yibum, same. So again, these cases all come up where people, and again, these are not intentional cases. Understand, I mean, maybe the pregnant, the nursing one might be an intentional case, but the Yibum cases were not intentional cases. These are cases where people didn't know the halacha, made an accident, had an accident. Made an accident. Oops, what happens? You know. Okay. Look at this Rambam. This is in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Yibum V'Chalitza. I'll we'll just do this quickly because I know it's getting late. Take a look at Halacha Yotes. Halacha Yotes. It's on the page that does not say Perek Sheni. Okay, I should have numbered it. I apologize. Yotes. Hayivam alotis yavim velo tachlot ad shetamtin tishim yom. Chutz miyom amisu or miyom hayibum or yom achalitza kishar kol anashim. So the halach is about say that a yivama, if a woman's husband dies, she should not do anything, no yibum, no chalitza, nothing, until at least 90 days after the death of her husband. Umipnei ma lo tachlos besoch tishim yom. Why should she not go ahead and do anything within 90 days? Mipnei she'ena ruya liyibum v'ne'emar im lo yachbo tza'ish v'chaltza nalo be'eishi o liyibum o lechalitza v'chalzman she'ena o liyibum ino. So we'll say, so therefore the halach is we make her wait 90 days because the mice again, we want to see if she's pregnant. And again, we don't remember, I'll say just do chalitza. No, because remember, yibum and chalitza are only effective when what? When the other could happen. Bless you. So yibum was only effective when chalitza could happen. Chalitza is only effective when yibum could happen. Therefore, again, within the 90 days, since you can't do either of those things, therefore the mice, you have to wait. However, v'im yibim oso chalitz b'soch ha'shol shechadashim, but this goes to Derek's point. So now we have a mandated waiting period. Now what? Let's say someone did yibum or chalitza during that time. The hoil ve'ena mu'uberes, hareze niftera ve'ena tzricha klum. So I will say, if you did it during that time, and what? Let's say you did chalitza during that time, and it turns out that she's not pregnant. Let's say we find out later on she's not pregnant. Then retroactively, again, as long as you know she wasn't pregnant, lemaisa the chalitza works. So number one is we see that if you ended up doing yibum or chalitza during the 90-day period, and it's clear that she was not pregnant during that time, even though we don't want you to do it, if you did it, it works. That's number one. Chaf. If someone did chalitza, and then it turns out that what? The Yavama was pregnant. Turns out she was pregnant, and she gives birth. So we'll say now, in this case, so we remember, and also the pregnancy was from her deceased husband. So now she went ahead and she got, you know, I'm sorry, the timing we know. Timing we could know. Remember, and this is a case, this is the case of chalitza. So there was no intimate contact between the widow and her brother-in-law. So we'll start with the case of chalitza to keep it easy. You know, just so you know, there are interesting cases in halacha, contemporary halacha, that deal with, you know, now that we have the scientific ability for sperm retrieval, so you have actually cases like this that came up where a husband was terminally ill, but yet the husband and wife said they wanted to have children together. So lemaisa, again, they did sperm retrieval, so froze the sperm, and impregnated the woman after the husband died. So you have interesting situations like this which pose fantastic discussions in a halachic perspective. In any event, I don't know why I brought that up. I guess because of the dead husband, that's why. Okay, so now remember, in this case over here, so what happens? So now, cholisli vimtovanim says mubaras yalda. So now I did. So let's say again, Reuven died. Shimon did chalitza with Leah, and then it turns out that Leah is pregnant from Reuven. So what's that halacha? Im hayov latsha kayama harei zo kemishal nechlitza lo meolam muteris lekahuna umutra bekrovosa. So we'll say if the child is healthy, so that's the easy case. The child is healthy, mazel tov, everything is good. It turns out then that what Reuven did not die without children, in which case there's no yibum or chalitza at all. The fact that they did chalitza is absolutely meaningless. Im hepila. However, again, let's say she miscarried. Osha shloshim yom achar shenolot. Or for that matter, again, the child died within 30 days of birth. Choser v'choletz. You have to go back and do chalitza. Hu o echad me'echav. Now, both say, interesting, if you do chalitza again. Now, in this case, someone has to do chalitza. So it doesn't have to be the guy who did the first chalitza. It could be someone else as well. Why? She chalitza sam'uberes eina chalitza ubiya sam'uberes eina yibum. Because both say, halach l'maisa, we paskin like Reish Lakish. That what? Chalitza or yibum done with a pregnant widow is not halachically meaningful. So, No, because remember again, he's not telling you to do chalitza. He's talking about if he did chalitza. So he didn't ask us. He didn't ask us. So of course we're concerned for it. But what are you supposed to do? He did it. Right? The case over here, remember, that's what I'm starts out by saying, don't do anything within 90 days. This is a case of where he did something within 90 days. He didn't ask us.
Right. Isn't the idea that there's going to be, that people are going to see the fact that she actually did a chalitza and a kohen is still allowed to marry?
It's a,
didn't the Gemara talk about the fact that, like, you have to do it?
No, but that's not this case. That's
the case that you can't. It says,
I don't know, you can't.
Remember, again, case right. No. It's not chal. If the Vlad is, no, because if she has a baby, everyone knows that she didn't do chalitza, that the chalitza is meaningless. If she had a baby.
Wasn't the Gemara concerned about the fact that
where there's no baby, wherever there's a living baby, that's clear and indisputable proof that there was no din of yibum, which means even if people heard about the chalitza, everyone's going to know the chalitza was meaningless because there was no din of yibum. When the Gemara was concerned, Rabbi Yaakov, about your case, that's when there was no living baby. That's the concern. That is, they're going to hear she did chalitza, because remember, that was also talking about the tzara. That was talking about the wife who we know for sure is not pregnant. The concern was the husband was overseas with his other wife. The concern is that maybe she was pregnant. So Rambam Paskin's halacha l'maisa like Reish Lakish, bottom line, therefore again, that's why we always make the Yavam wait until it's clear that she's not pregnant from the deceased husband. But if it turns out that they did Yibam or Chalitza, and then it turns out that she was pregnant, and then again, one of two scenarios happens. If the baby is born living in well, Baruch Hashem, then it turns out that what? There was no obligation of Yibam or Chalitza altogether. Therefore, if he did Chalitza, it's meaningless. If he did Yibam, he did engage in an accidental act of illicit relations with his brother's wife, in which case he'd have to bring a karban. But Lamaisa, if the baby dies, or she miscarries, then what? Then halacha l'maaseh, it turns out that she is subject to yibum, but the yibum or chalitza that was done while she was pregnant is not halachically valid, and therefore, says Reish Lakish, she would have to do yibum or chalitza again. Now, of course, the interesting part over here is, she also now, doesn't mean she has to do yibum or chalitza again with the same brother. It could be that this second time around with a real yibum or chalitza, she could just do it with another brother, could do it as well. All right, they both side. I will say, again, Yaakov Moshe Nudelman is going to be giving the shir Emirat Hashem for Monday and Tuesday. So we're going to start Emirat Hashem at 5:45, because the truth is, they're long dapim. Emirat Hashem will send it out in the email today as well. He's going to pick up right where I left off today, yes.
Isn't the